Is that a clunker or a classic?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. The government said this morning retail sales fell slightly from June to July, which was a surprise. Economists were expecting to hear sales rose because of the Cash for Clunkers car incentive program. Well, Cash for Clunkers did sell more cars. It's just that Americans didn't buy much else. Even though Cash for Clunkers has succeeded, it will not take some of the most polluting cars off the road because it only applies to vehicles younger than 25 years. This morning's Los Angeles Times tells how the classic car lobby managed to get that exclusion through Congress. Reporter Ken Bensinger co-wrote the story. Hi, Ken.
Morning.
So, Ken, what kind of car owners does this affect?
Well, the technical rule is any car older than 25 years is not eligible. We talked to a gentleman who owns a 1981 Ford F-150 pickup, and he doesn't see it as a classic, and I don't think there's very many people who would see that vehicle as a classic, but he's prohibited from turning it into the Cash for Clunkers program because of the date it was made. So he's stuck with it. He's currently trying to sell it. He thinks that maybe he can get $1,600 for it rather than $4,500, and says that he feels that he got shut out of something that he paid for. It's a taxpayer-funded program.
How do these older cars get excluded from Cash for Clunkers?
It's the work of a lobbyist group. They worked a circuit on Capitol Hill talking to different legislators until they found a sympathetic voice and got that provision through.
How many old cars do you think aren't getting traded in because of this exclusion?
Well, it's hard to know exactly, but what we do know is that there are just under 5 million cars from 1983 or older that are registered on the road today. How many of those are owned by people who, A, want to turn them in, and B, have the money to buy a new car is a little unclear, but clearly there's quite a few cars that aren't being traded in because of this rule.
And those cars that aren't getting traded in, how does that affect the mileage increase that is supposed to come about from the trade program?
Well, the general rule, the older a car is, probably on average, the less fuel efficient it is. But some of the cars from the early 80s are actually surprisingly efficient. What older cars really are bad on is smog production. Cars prior to the mid-70s didn't have catalytic converters. As a result, what they put out can be as much as 400 times dirtier in terms of contaminants than modern cars.
Ken Bensinger is a reporter at the Los Angeles Times. Ken, thank you.
My pleasure.
On a related note, Ford said this morning it's increasing production by 10,000 cars this year to meet the higher demand that Cash for Clunkers has created. And the Labor Department says the number of newly laid off workers filing claims for unemployment benefits, unfortunately, that rose unexpectedly last week. The S&P 500 is up 0.3%, and so is the NASDAQ. And the Dow is up less than that, 13 points now at 9,375. European markets ended almost 1% higher today. The French and German economies grew slightly last quarter, so that marks the end of recession there. Asian markets were higher today as well. Some big names in the food industry are calling on Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack to help with what they call a pending sugar shortage. Here's reporter Tamara Keith.
Names like Krispy Kreme, Hershey, and the American Bakers Association want to make sure we can all keep getting sugar highs without paying higher prices. In a letter sent to the Agriculture Secretary, they say consumers will pay more and manufacturing jobs will be at risk without prompt action. They want the government to allow more foreign sugar imports. Rob Mackey is president and CEO of the Bakers Association.
The sugar market in the United States is not a free market. It's artificially supported, or do I dare say artificially sweetened, by federal sugar policies.
Those policies inflate U.S. sugar prices to help farmers. That's why Jack Roney, the chief economist at the American Sugar Alliance, thinks this is more about pricing than an actual sugar shortage.
The amount of surplus left over at the end of this year is over 11%. That's certainly adequate.
It seems sorting through this fight could put the USDA in a sticky situation. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
American Public Media presents the Marketplace Whiteboard, videos unwrapping the basics of the financial crisis. You can watch them anytime at marketplace.org.
The bankrupt Frontier Airlines is up for auction today. The Denver-based low-cost carrier was expected to be bought by the regional airline Republic, But now it's looking like Southwest will probably own Frontier. That would raise eyebrows across the industry, as Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports.
First and foremost, the acquisition would set up a big contest in Denver. The Mile High City is one of United's main hubs, and according to SH&E aviation consultant Webster O'Brien,
in Denver, Southwest will pull to parity with United.
Southwest will also get its first international routes to Mexico and Costa Rica if its bid for Frontier is successful. And it'll get access to Frontier's other U.S. markets, including Atlanta, home to the busiest airport in the world.
What it means is that you're picking up the expertise, and you're picking up the ground presence, and you're picking up the sales distribution. Many of the things that take time and expense to build up on your own.
Southwest used to be seen as the scrappy niche player in the airline business, but Seth Kaplan of Airline Weekly says these days it's playing with the big dogs and maybe even beating them at their own game.
You know, Southwest is an airline that adapts very well to a changing marketplace. A lot of the things that they've done right over the years have put them in a position to do this.
And knocking off a low-cost competitor may be a particularly good move right now. Southwest CEO told an industry conference yesterday that ticket prices are going to have to go up soon to cover costs. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
And finally, Venezuelan officials have shut down two more of that country's best-known golf courses after President Chavez pronounced the sport bourgeois. That's nine courses closed in the last 3 years, most of them built originally for Americans working in the oil industry. Besides calling golf bourgeois, Chavez also mocked golf carts as emblems of laziness. His tone has led golfers to speculate that he probably just got done shooting a terrible round. There is nothing like a quadruple bogey to make you want to ban that sport forever. Checking stocks again, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 12 points, about a tenth of a percent, at 9,374. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great Thursday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.